morning by finishing off a little bit about the Lie derivative before going on to connections, curvature and computation. So I'm going to put that over here so when we, it can sort of stay there a while, but it's not going to be relevant for the main theme of today's lecture. So some of the geometrical significance of the Lie derivative is kind of often associated with choice of coordinates on our manifold. And one way of seeing this is to think about this definition of the Lie derivative as a commutator. So if we were at some point sort of zero, the our sort of origin, we could imagine going along, get my ordering straight, to a vector field V and U, and we could also imagine going along U and then along V. And because we're in a curved space, we have to recognize that even if we go the same sort of little bit along each of these vector fields, that doesn't mean we get to the same point. So it could be because we have curvature in our manifold, it could be some aspect of the vector fields itself, but we kind of learn that when we're dealing with curved space, these things sometimes happen. So the significance, if I label the points, I'm going to need them. The significance of the Lie bracket is that it sort of tells us something about how a loop fails to close. So in a sense here, we're going first along U, then along V, and subtracting off going along V, then along U. And so this is proportional to the Lie bracket, but it's a second order effect, because as we shrink to a neighborhood of the point, we're sort of expecting things to move closer and closer to being tied off. So just to demonstrate this, we'll sort of just need a couple of expressions. So if we look at the coordinates of the point A, then we can get there by starting at x naught. We move a little bit along V. And then just to go to second order in the Taylor expansion, we're going to get a sort of V partial derivative of V. Another thing that's useful is that the components of the vector U at A are going to be the same as the components of the vector U at naught plus the derivative of U along V. So these are the two basic ingredients that we'll use to derive this relation. So what I want is the coordinates at D minus the coordinates at B. So if I look for D, so the coordinates at D are going to be an expansion from C. So I simply do my quadratic expansion of the coordinates from C to move to D. And then, of course, we've got plus higher order terms. I then find xc. So that's my xc. I then expand v. And then the last term is in fact the same as the expression at the point naught because we're already at quadratic order. So those are the coordinates at D. If I want the coordinates at B, all I do is I swap S with T and U with V, because that's the only difference. And so you can see that obviously this term is symmetric under that swap. So if I get my colored chalk up, if there is any. So this term is obviously symmetric. This linear combination here is symmetric under that swap. And this combination at the quadratic level is also symmetric. So when I take xd minus xb, then what I end up with is, as advertised, the Lie bracket of U and V. So just by expanding out both the position, the coordinates of the points and the vectors, you can sort of verify that indeed the Lie bracket tells you how by how far this little curve has failed to close. So you can think of this as maybe U and V, you have some unknown manifold, curve manifold, and you say, let me try and put coordinates on it. I want to lay down a chart. And what this is telling you is if you were choosing distance along V or parametric distance along U as your coordinate, it's not exactly going to work because these two points would both be, in some sense, coordinates T and S. So this whole process is telling you something about the way you're trying to describe the underlying space. And of course, the final important thing about the Lie derivative is something which I know you've seen, but you've seen in a bit of a different context, and that is killing vectors. No, these are in some, what I've done here, this is meant to be infinitesimal expansion. So what I've done is I've transported myself down into a coordinate chart, which is why I'm writing x mu. So I'm allowed to write down things like sort of the coordinates of a position because I'm writing it in a local chart. So I'm locally in Rn. So I'm using here the fact that the manifold is locally like Rn. So a killing vector is a vector field, and this is how it's really defined, along which the metric is Lie invariant. So in other words, LK of G is zero for a killing field K. And what it means is that the field K, or if you were to integrate it up to form the curves that K is tangent to, this represents the symmetry of the metric. So it's really useful when you have killing vectors, because what it tends to mean is you can simplify coordinates. You can find nice coordinates for your metric. You can maybe get rid of cross terms. You can reduce the degrees of freedom. All these, you know, the, in four dimensions, your metric is a symmetric second rank covariant tensor. It's got, in principle, 10 independent components, all of which are non-linearly coupled via Einstein's equation. So it's a bit of a nightmare, really. So if you want to find solutions, you want to simplify. And so what that means is you use symmetries. And so the killing vectors are very useful for trying to find ways of simplifying your metric or nice coordinates. So the final thing I just want to note is a relationship between D and the Lie derivative, which I'm just going to quote. Can't see it at all. If, what about here? No, you can't see it down there. Sorry, you know, I can see. Sorry, I'm just looking here. I can see you haven't got a line of sight.
Hurry up, man.
Here? Is this going to work? I'm just trying to not go to that side. Tell you what, I'll put it on the very first board there, which I wasn't gonna write, so right on. Put it over here. Should be able to see here if it's right at the top. Okay, so that sort of finishes off what I wanted to say, at least explicitly, about the Lie derivative. So what I want to do now is to go back to the final derivative, which is the one that you're familiar with. So this is, if you like, the start of our third lecture. So what we're going to do is we're going to just recap on this final derivative, but from maybe a different perspective, yeah? Oh, did I put a comma? I meant a line, sorry. That's a line, it just didn't get all the way up to the top. So, where, sorry? This?
No, this?
So this is a two form, yep. And so therefore it is a map from TP of M cross TP of M into the reals. So here's one vector, here's the other vector. So if you were doing it with indices, this would contract on the first index and this on the second. So it's just the, you know, it's sort of saying that it's the same Bra-Ket type of notation, which is, you know, sort of indicating that the form acts on the vector. In this case, it's a two form, so it's acting on two vectors. And then these are ordered because, you know, there's... Yep.
You need to figure out the
sort of
rank two tensor.
Mm-hmm.
How is that?
So if you went back to the way I defined it in terms of taking the tensor at the new at the new point and then pushing forward the tensor from the old point, you would go via that definition, and if you went through in components, what you would find would be a pattern exactly as I said for each. So first of all, you take the partial derivative along the vector field. For each vector index, you subtract off the sort of contraction of that vector index with a partial derivative, acting on the underlying vector field. And for each covector index, you do it with a plus sign. So basically, the way you could see would be to use the Leibnizian rule of the fact that it's a derivation. And so if you had two vectors, u and v, you take the lead derivative of, you know, u and then the lead derivative of v. So you would build it up by just looking at combinations. I mean, I'll write it down, but it's basically just sort of doing the obvious thing. So for example, I'm just going to be very quick here, I don't want to... So this would be T mean U sigma, U sigma. So that's sort of the pattern, yeah. So colloquially, what a connection is doing is providing a link between tangent spaces in the tangent bundle. Once you've got a link between the tangent spaces, you know how to move vectors from one point to another, so from one tangent space into another. So that is what the connection does, and we define the connection components. In a particular basis. So this is an element of the vector basis. And you can think of the derivation as a covector or being covariant. I'll put it in inverted commas because, of course, it isn't a covector. It's an operator, it's a derivation, it's not an object in and of itself, of its own right, but you can think of it as having this covariant nature. And so when you act on your vector basis, you end up getting these connection components. So these are essentially going to end up being the Christoffel symbols that you would be familiar with from the first GR course. So that's how you define the connection components. this perhaps seems a little bit sort of almost tautological or as if it's not saying much, but how would you track how you were connecting your tangent spaces together? Well, you would say, okay, I've got my basis, my collection of E's. If I shift just a little bit away from P, does that basis move to the basis at P plus delta P, or is it some linear transformation of the basis elements? How does it transform? And so that is really encoded in the gammas here, because it's telling you how your basis changes as you move around in the tangent bundle. And so the things that the covariant derivative must satisfy to stress is a covariant derivative can be quite general. All it has to do is it's got to be something that acts like a derivative. So in other words, that's this sort of idea of it being Leibnizian. It has to reduce to D on functions, because remember D was like taking partial derivatives, and you're already familiar with the idea that the covariant derivative acting on a function is just a partial derivative, because that does transform in a tensorial way. And then saying that it commutes with contractions is saying simply that it's respecting this underlying vector space structure, the fact that, you know, the omega is a map from the tangent space into the reals. So if the covariant derivative didn't respect that map, then it wouldn't make sense as a connection between the tangent spaces. So that's all it has to do. And if it satisfies those properties, then it is a legitimate covariant derivative or a legitimate connection. And so what we do, of course, in GR is that we take a very specific covariant derivative, one that sort of fits with the metric, one that makes sense and from our own sort of personal intuition. So just to see that this is, in fact, what you're familiar with, let's sort of look at this expression and act it just on a vector, some general vector. And we want to take a covariant derivative of the vector V. And so we write our vector V with respect to some basis, E. It's Leibnizian, so oops, I didn't want to underline that. So we take the derivative of each of these pieces in turn. These V's are scalars. So now you're seeing, when I talked about the abstract index notation, I was saying that if we wrote things from a geometric perspective, VA or V mu or whatever were components of a vector in a certain basis and therefore were scalars. So this reduces to D acting on the scalars. And then the second piece, grad of E, well, I just wrote down what that was over there. So if I now pull out an omega b, and let me just change that. Well, actually, I'll leave it as an A. But I want to change this dummy index here to a C. I've got my indices right there. So pulling out the vector basis and the covector basis, you see in brackets there what should be the familiar expression for the covariant derivative of a vector. So the components of the covariant derivative of the vector are exactly what you would write if you were doing this in abstract index notation. You would have written grad B VA equals this. VA comma B plus VC gamma ABC. Yep.
In the very last equation you wrote, what is this omega B? What does it represent?
It's the element of the of the covector basis, the cotangent space basis. So I wrote down, when I defined what covectors were on Monday, I talked about the basis for the tangent space and the cotangent space. So these are just the basis elements. So when you want to write down components, you're always writing down components with respect to a basis.
So this omega B, E, A is just delta B, A, right?
No, because omega is not acting on E in that case. I haven't written it with a bra or a ket. I haven't written omega B or VA. They're just objects. You know, there's a sort of hidden tensor product there, if you like. You know, I mean, I wrote it on the left, but I'm not going to keep writing tensor products all the time. So if I want to contract, I'll make it explicit that I'm doing a contraction like that expression over there with the bra and ket notation, or I'll write omega of V or whatever. So in GR, we choose the metric connection, which means the covariant derivative of the metric vanishes. So that's how we choose. And this also means then that the grad is associated with parallel transport, or what we intuitively mean by parallel transport. So parallel transport is defined for a connection in general by saying that, say, grad T of V is proportional to V. But if we have a metric connection, then what this is telling us is that angles really are preserved, because, of course, our metric doesn't just tell us about lengths, it tells us about angles.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you exactly mean by it commutes with contractions? Don't you mean
so exactly? In the sense that so if you were having I'm probably going to use this in a bit. If you took a covariant derivative of, say, omega u here, right? That's a scalar, so that should be d of omega u. But it's also Leibnizian, so you would have put grad of omega, and then you would be contracting on the second index, if you like, with u, plus omega, and then grad of u. So each of these individual pieces would have connection components. and they'd better cancel because the whole thing is a scalar, and we know the connection has to kind of has to reduce to D on functions. So it's that, I guess that's, you know, that's sort of what I meant in a way, that it's.
So it's not that it commutes this G, rather that.
Oh, right, no, you didn't need the metric. So it's really sort of saying that it's, you know, if you've acted with some map, rather than just having omega tensor E, if you've actually taken some action of the covector on some part or one of the vector indices, then this, you know, the covariant derivative has to sort of respect the structure of the tangent and cotangent bundle. I sort of see that as meaning it's got to respect the structure, or, you know, of the bundles, I suppose, or the way everything links together. Smith, I have a very pictorial, woolly understanding of things.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is an angle in sub-dimensions.
Well, this is just yes. If you just were in a Euclidean space, this would really be an angle, right? But it's now, this is kind of saying, but in general, it's telling you something which you can interpret as an angle. So it may actually be a boost parameter, I suppose. But it's if this were just purely for space-like vectors, then it really would be like an angle. And then your parallel transport really would be parallel, because you would be literally keeping that angle constant as you moved along your tangent vector T. So, but the phrase parallel transport just means parallel with respect to the connection. But we have an intuitive understanding of what parallel is in terms of, you know, a very geometrical understanding about fixed angles. And I'm saying that that really is what it is for the, if you pick the metric connection. So I guess a lot of the language that gets exported into the mathematics is based on our intuition of Euclidean geometry in terms of the way we see things and how we, you know, the words we use. The other thing, of course, is that we don't just take the metric to be covariantly constant. We also want our connection to be torsion free. So what's torsion? You've already seen a little bit of this, I think. Torsion is telling you something about what happens when you anti-symmetrize. So the torsion tensor is defined in the following way. It says, take the derivative, the torsion tensor acting on two vectors, u and v. Take the derivative, covariant derivative of v along u, subtract the covariant derivative of u along v, and then subtract the Lie bracket of u and v, and that is the torsion tensor. And so that vanishes in general relativity. So this is almost the same as saying that your connection is symmetric. So if you choose a basis, which is not a coordinate basis, it may actually be that the Lie bracket of different basis vectors doesn't vanish. And in that case, if there's non-zero Lie brackets of your chosen basis, then this gives rise to what's known as the structure constant. So you know that the overall the basis spans the whole space. So you know that if you take the Lie bracket of two basis vectors, it has to be a linear combination of all the others. But it obviously doesn't have to be zero. So the C's are those constants that tell you about commutators between the different basis vectors. And so it's really telling you something about the algebra of your vectors. So it might be that you have a subset, say, or some sort of little family of vectors which closes under this Lie algebra but doesn't necessarily span the whole space. And so this is again telling you something about the underlying space, space-time. So for example, in your black hole space that you looked at with Neil, the Schwarzschild metric, that has an SO3 symmetry, spherically symmetric. And what that means is you can write down a little set of vectors which have this an SO3 algebra.
Question? Mm-hmm. Could you please repeat what you mean with when you have a vector field that's a subscript of your covariant derivative?
Vector field that's what, sorry?
It's a subscript of your covariant derivative.
All right, so what grad u of v is. So that's taking the covariant derivative along u. So if I was writing it in components, I would have said these are the components of the covariant derivative of V, and I would have taken UB times this expression here. So that would be it in components, or I would be saying that from this expression here, I would act with this omega B on U to make this just simply into some vector. So here in components, it would be UB VA, B plus gamma ABC BC. So that would be how it would look in components. So it's sort of mopping up that free covector index, contracting it with U, if you like. So if you demand that your connection is torsion-free and that it preserves the metric, then you end up with the familiar Levi-Civita expression. Which you will have already seen.
In your gamma, is it ABC or is it BAC?
Where, sorry?
Well, just there. I mean, is it down, up, down, or is it up, down, down? Well, because the order of those indices are...
In this case, it's... I mean, I'm not... the connection components has an... I'm not going to... raise or lower these indices at all. This is how it's defined, as it's a sort of one contravariant, two covariant. So I'm not going to pull an index down, so I don't care about, in some sense, about the order. The one thing, though, while you've raised that point, though, is that the important thing to remember is that this first slot here is always the differentiating slot. So you can see over here that this grad, which is the covariant object, which is sort of represented by the omega on the right-hand side, is appearing in the first index. So there's a definite, that's that order is the one that counts. So now I want to look a little bit more at the connection, and I'm going to start by defining an object which I'll call the connection one form, but you may also see this called the spin connection. So this is an object which you will also see if you do spinners on space-time. So what I'm going to claim is that the symmetric part of these connection one forms, and in this case there is an ordering, first index is up, second index is down. So if you, even though I'm never going to raise and lower indices on my gamma, I guess that's going to answer your question. You threw me there because I thought, but I don't raise and lower indices on the gamma, so I don't care. But in fact, certainly on the connection one forms, the ordering of the indices will matter. So just to demonstrate this, D of GAB is equal to the covariant derivative on GAB. Remember, the G, A, B are scalars. And so this is the covariant derivative acting on G of E, A, E, B, which is how you define the components of G. We know the covariant derivative of G vanishes because this is a metric connection. So this is going to be G with grad EA plus G where your covariant derivative acts on EB. Again, using the Leibnizian property. So again, I use my expression for the covariant derivative. So you simply go through writing down what you mean by each expression. GAB are the components of G in a basis. They're a set of scalars. Take the derivative. You've got the covariant derivative of this, these scalars. What are the scalars? They're the contraction of the metric with the basis elements. The metric's covariantly constant, so you simply get the covariant derivative acting on each of the basis elements in turn. That gives you the connection, which is really just the connection one forms times and two sets of vectors, EAD, which peel out the components of the metric for you, hence giving you the symmetric part of the connection one forms. Yep.
Just to be clear, in the theorem, on the left-hand side, indices are not the components, but on the right-hand side they are.
No, it's completely consistent on both sides. On the left-hand side, the GABs are the components of the metric in a particular basis.
No, the statement of the theorem, the line above.
Yes.
The indices on the
theta. These are also.
Oh, right. Sorry. So, they are also components in the sense that, I mean, the thing that makes it. The thing is, of course, that because this is the connection, you know, it's a slightly, you know, these. So these are, in fact, labels. Or they're not. This is not abstract index notation in this case.
Exactly.
Yeah. So these are simply labels that, you know, the theta is a one form, but there are a whole sort of set of these one forms which are labeled by the indices A and B.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. And on the other side,
yeah,
they are actually indices of components of G, right?
So on the right hand side, the A and the C are the scalar components of G. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is the G of EAB. Yeah.
So a question: if we have metricity, is the right hand side zero?
If we have what, sorry?
If the covariant derivative acting on the metric is zero, does that imply that
No, that was my whole point.
Yeah.
That G are the scalars, which are the components of the metric in a basis. It's not the metric. This is not abstract index notation. So it really that even though I've used at this step here the fact that connection is a metric connection. Because grad is acting on this G of EA of EB. If we didn't have the metric connection, I would also have a term, grad G, contracted with EAB. It is the geometric object G, which is covariantly constant. So this was when I was making this point about abstract index notation. This is, in some sense, highlighting some of the features of the different, you know, of whether you're in abstract index notation or you're not. And here we're not.
I'm just used to the fact that the spin connection is anti-symmetric.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's because when you're doing spinners, you usually go to an orthonormal basis.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's a theorem which says that, you know, if you can't put a global, basis, well, maybe not orthonormal, but certainly global orthogonal basis on a space, then you can't put a spin connection on it. So normally you do use an orthonormal basis. And if you have an orthonormal basis, then, so here, for example, if you had an orthonormal basis, then GAB would be eta AB, which implies theta AB is minus theta BA, right? So if you're in an orthonormal basis, your spin connection is anti-symmetric.
And locally you can always do that.
Locally, yeah. But it's whether or not you can do it globally that matters usually. So finally, this is about as far as I'm going to get today, I can see. I just want to derive one of Cartan's structural equations. We'll carry on at 11:30 and at least discuss the other one. So what I'm going to do here is try this has given me the symmetric part of the spin connection, and now I want to have an expression which is going to tell me something about the rest of the spin connection. So let me just consider this combination, theta wedge omega. And this is, I can rewrite this as my connection components times omega b wedge omega c. So you can see this is picking up the anti-symmetric part of gamma. So what we might expect is, after we've done a bit of work, we might expect an expression which involves the torsion as well as some expression involving our connection components. So because the wedge product is anti-symmetric, I can simply replace the gammas by the anti-symmetrized version on B and C. So then I use my definition of torsion to say, well, you know, the skew part of gamma is the torsion up to the structure constants. Then I'm going to say that this first part is going to define me. Let me just put this up here. Just going to define a two-form, which is the torsion two-form, that kind of peels off the torsion part of that. And then I'm simply saying, what are the structure constants? Well, the structure constants are defined via commutators of the basis vectors. So I'm just really importing the expression for the definition of the structure constants. And then I'm going to say, but hang on, this is familiar, this expression here. Because if I look over at what I wrote on that very first blackboard as a relation between the exterior derivative and the Lie derivative, you see here, this is an omega, this is my u, and that's my v. So what I've got here is simply, I can replace using the expression of the relationship between the Lie derivative and the exterior derivative. So the first two terms on the right-hand side of that relation, I've got basis vectors here. So omega A of EB is just delta AB, which means it's a 1 or a 0. So when I act on it with my vector, which is a differential operator, that kills it. So the first two terms vanish. So all I've got there left is D of omega A. But in fact, this whole thing here is just d omega A. So what I end up with is what is called Cartan's first structural equation. So, given that I said my metric connection was torsion-free and it left the metric invariant, in other words, grad G was zero, this is telling me that I can get the symmetric part of my spin connection by looking at the components of the metric in my basis, taking the exterior derivative, and I can get the rest of it by taking the exterior derivative of my basis one forms. And so this gives quite an efficient way of computing a connection. So this turns out to give a very efficient way of computing connections. So I'm going to break here because we're about 10 o'clock. So in the third lecture, remember I'm taking over Latham's slot today. We'll come back, we'll do the look at curvature, again using this same notation and the same framework. We'll write down Cartan's second equation, and then we'll actually see it in action, sort of show you different ways of computing curvature, which are far more efficient than trying to sort of individually calculate connection components. Now, I mean, I've been told you guys are wizards with Mathematica, but Mathematica is only, or using some manipulation program to compute curvatures and connections is only ever useful if you have an explicit metric. And there are many cases where you want to leave things a little bit general, in which case I reckon with Mathematica you're stuffed. So it's quite useful to have sort of concrete calculational tools. So we'll pause there.